This is a podcast from the Queen City Podcast Network.
This is Sports Charlotte, the podcast about sports in Charlotte. My name is Herb White. I'm editor-in-chief at the Charlotte Post. And with me again is...
Hello, Cameron Williams, staff reporter of the Charlotte Post.
Oh, that works. Well, now we've got a fancy title to go along with it. That's good. It's Thursday, March 28th. 2024. Easter weekend is upon us. It's always a good time.
We get Friday off.
Yes. That's among the perks of Easter weekend. And so we're looking forward to that a whole bunch. And the wait is over. DraftKings Sportsbook. It's here in North Carolina. Been here since the 11th of March. And a lot of people are taking advantage of it, helping themselves to some good-natured wagering. And here we go. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now using code QCPN and bet $5 to get $250 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code QCPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 877-1-855-43 or visit morethanagame.nc.gov. 21 plus, North Carolina only. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. Deposit and eligibility restrictions apply. Terms at DraftKings.com/sportsbook/NC. NASCAR is not a sponsor of this promotion and used under license. So there we go.
Ta-da. I'm a fan of the old sports gambling. But do it smartly.
You don't want to go overboard with this stuff.
That's right.
It's, you don't want to put your kids' college fund up for exposure and things like that. But this week, as usual, quite a bunch is happening in Charlotte, has happened over the past week. It's Thursday, and just yesterday it was announced that Jadeveon Clowney is signing with the Panthers for a reported 2-year, $20 million deal. Is it a good thing?
That's a good question. You look at Clowney, and he's a guy that has shown a lot of good things throughout his career. Obviously, number one pick in 2014. There we go. I remembered. He's one of those kids that was just like everybody thought he was going to be like the next great thing. And then, he has a good couple years, kind of deals with the injury bug here and there. But I think for Carolina's purposes, it was a good signing because, when you get rid of an edge rusher like Brian Burns, you got to have someone to fill in that production. Can Clowney fill in the same amount of production? We'll have to wait till August and September to see. But I think the signing was good? I think it was good for the sheer fact that the value they got was good. It wasn't like they had to pay him buku's amounts of money to come to Carolina. So I think it was an interesting signing, exciting signing that the fans can rally around, and I'll be interested to see what he can put on the field.
He's been to 3 Pro Bowls,
yeah.
So it's not like he's a the label is usually bust.
Yeah.
It's not like he's a total bust, but there was so much hype around him coming out of college.
Yeah.
He was supposed to be the next coming of Deacon Jones and Michael Strahan rolled into one, and it hasn't quite turned out that way. So, on the one hand, you can say he's had a very solid NFL career. But as far as, this dude is on his way to Canton before actually playing a down in the league, that doesn't look like it's going to happen.
Yeah, and that's the thing with expectations. You're putting so much hype around a kid that's in college. There's people doing it with Caleb Williams now at USC. They're putting so much, and personally, I would hate it if I was in these kids' shoes because it's like you got so much expectation. I'm just out here doing what I can do, yeah, I've had a great college career, but how does that translate to the pro game? You don't really know.
Just like when high school stars make the transition to college.
Yeah.
It gets not incrementally, it really ratchets up.
Oh, yeah. I mean, how many times, I know this is a basketball game, but how many times do you see kids that are in the top 20 of the ESPN 100 that falter and either don't even make the league or make the league and sit on the bench or end up in the G League? It doesn't mean that you're going to be the next great thing. You got to keep working, clearly, but I just think sometimes the people, we as media even, we set these bars for certain athletes, and it's like if they don't meet that expectation, they're not good. I think that's what happened with Clowney, but like you said, he's had a solid career, and I don't think that by any stretch of the means he's a bust, because you mentioned the Pro Bowls, but he hadn't lived up to the next Reggie White, Deacon Jones.
Julius Peppers.
I know he was an outside linebacker, but lined up on the line. Lawrence Taylor. But he's perfectly capable of being an anchor on that defense for Carolina.
And so the other side of that is it now gives them, ostensibly, that bookend outside linebacker. DJ Wanham on one side, Clowney on the other. But I guess on the other hand, the Panthers were so putrid last year. All the upgrades you can get your hands on are going to be good. Yeah. And comparatively speaking, Brian Burns and Clowney finished with roughly the same number of sacks, 9.5.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, if sacks is the only measure that you're going to apply to that position, you're basically replacing one player with another at a reduced rate, because Brian Burns was, the contract that he signed, 5 years, $150 million versus Jadeveon Clowney at 2 years and 20. Yeah. But, the Panthers made out like bandits if they can get any kind of production out of him.
Yeah. And it's one thing I think Charlotte media as a whole did was put so much. They put Brian Burns up on this pedestal like he was the premier edge rusher in football, and I'm just like...
Like he was Julius Peppers?
I don't see it.
Or Lawrence Taylor?
Well, I've heard out of people's mouths saying that, he was as good as T.J. Watt or Micah Parsons, and I'm just like...
Who said that? And what were they drinking? Because I want some of that.
Exactly. And my point being, I'm like, if you really think that you're drinking something or on... some heavy substance, but it's just not true. Simply, if you just watch the games and look at the numbers, it's just not true. And they're like, well, no, Brian Burns was great. I'm like, okay, he was great for Carolina.
Yeah.
And I don't like to say that to belittle the Panthers because,
the national media does that, so need not pile on.
they take care of that. But no, what I'm saying is we try to uplift these teams, but we've also got to be realists. To get better, yes, get better players in, but don't act like the players they had were superstars.
Yeah, and I know there was a period of mourning when Brian Burns was traded away, but he's been to three Pro Bowls.
Yeah.
Same up with Jadeveon Clowney. So, again...
You basically got the same dude
at a lower rate.
Much lower cost. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, I think from a metrics and numbers standpoint, it was about as perfect as you could have asked for.
Well, but the downside to that, if you basically got the same player, it means you didn't upgrade.
True, but on the flip, you upgraded because you freed up so much more cap room.
To hopefully get yourself some better players somewhere else?
Yeah. I don't think they were necessarily looking for an upgrade from Burns. They were wanting to keep him.
but they did need some upgrades at guard, and they got those. Yeah,
they got those. So, that's kind of what I'm saying is, it may not be an upgrade specifically at the position, but for what you're having to pay for them, I think it's a huge upgrade.
We'll see. We'll see about that. Because it's all talk until folks... play games that actually matter.
That's what we're doing. Oh, yeah,
we bump gums with the best of them. That's all there is to that. So, the Panthers have their new edge rusher. we're going to shift gears a little bit and talk about some basketball.
Hoops.
Yeah.
In the hoop state.
Hoops a bunch. The Charlotte 49ers are rebuilding their roster again after a fairly decent season.
Yeah.
The roster is going to look drastically different come next season.
Yeah.
What's up with that?
Yeah, you know, obviously the 49ers, me being an alma mater and being the quote-unquote aficionado, is there. It's near and dear to my heart, but the world of college basketball is just, it's getting so putrid. It's terrible. Everything is a grass is always greener scenario, and I don't necessarily fault the kids. I mean, if we just cut the brass tacks, DeSean Jackson, starting center, he left, entered the portal, and within a day is already committed to Iowa State for next year. Igor Milicic has entered the portal, Jackson Threadgill, Dalen Berry. I mean, the list could continue to go on. As of right now, Lekai Patterson is still on the 49ers roster. Could change. Not going to speculate on any of that. Haven't really had the chance to speak with him in depth yet. But all these players, when Ron Sanchez left last year, they all wanted Fern. They all wanted Fern to be the interim head coach. He was named the interim head coach. They played well enough this season to get him the official head coach tag and, you know, title. And then it's just like all these schools that have all this NIL money come saying, oh, here's $250,000. Here's this amount of money. Charlotte doesn't have that. They could have that if they had fans and donors that wanted to donate into the NIL collective like all these big schools have. But I just don't. Charlotte is a city where a lot of the fans aren't just necessarily Charlotte fans.
Fair weather, if at all.
Well, not just that, but I mean, you just look at the population of Charlotte as a whole. A lot of people that graduate from Charlotte move elsewhere, and people from elsewhere move here. So there's not going to be that, desire to donate to a school that you really didn't go to. Unless you're just like this major brand, like a Chapel Hill or a
Michigan.
Michigan or a Duke. And so you have all these factors like that playing into it. Because, I mean, money don't grow on trees.
Well, for some people. For the uber rich, they've got a grove of that stuff.
Yeah. And so, I mean, like I said, I don't blame the kids. I mean, they want to eat and they want to live high on the hog, too. So it's like, okay, play good minutes for this mid-major for $40,000 or go be sixth or seventh man for a power five and make $250,000. I know what I'd do.
And stay there as long as you need to because chances are the NBA is not going to be the ultimate destination. Perhaps Europe or Central or South America, Asia, Middle East.
And there's still avenues to get there, not playing as many minutes. So eat high on the hog while you can. I know I said that, and I'll beat that phrase up, but do what you can now to make all this money, and then you go play overseas in different places and still make, you know, a very livable salary.
Yeah, that's true. But now, if you're Aaron Fern, and you, I guess the advantage that you have is you know you're going to be head coach next year.
Yeah.
And potential recruits know that you are going to be the head coach and you should be for the foreseeable future. Is he in position to work a miracle in terms of recruiting? Because you've already laid out the pitfalls, as you see it, in the program, because NIL money is not as robust as some of these other places. Although, I don't know if Iowa State would be the sexiest place I'd get to go to play basketball. But
I mean, they are a 2-seed in the Sweet 16.
Still Iowa State. But still, I understand.
That's a great question you're posing, though. It was a question that I've talked with just a lot of other media folks, and it's, can Aaron Fern, who a lot of people within the United States, at least college kids, may not know the name. Can he be a presence out there in the recruiting world to immediately fill these gaps that they need with the same or better talent level? That's going to be huge. Because if someone said to me once, it's like, how's Aaron Fern going to be able to recruit because no one really knows him? It's a fair question.
Yeah.
And I mean, and I hadn't even had a chance to talk to Aaron either, but I think he can bring in good players. Obviously, the players that were on the roster wanted him to be the interim coach, so it's not like he's not a likable coach. I mean, DeSean Jackson transferred in under the impression he was playing for Ron Sanchez, left, and then Aaron Fern convinced him to come back. So he's got enough likable characteristics, obviously, to build these connections. But you know, one thing that drives me nuts is people say, oh, well, you know, college coaches have to get away from the one-and-done game, you know, recruiting high school talent to come and play one game. But they're the players, playing a one-and-done game right now.
Yeah, because the players are one-and-done.
You'll stay 1 year, then you'll hit the portal, okay? It's one-and-done. You're playing the same game just with 21-year-olds instead of 18-year-olds.
That's true. Or 22-year-olds, because some of these guys are sticking.
I mean, graduate and COVID years.
Armando Bacow, which year is he working on now? Eight?
Six, five or six, something like that.
Yeah, a bunch.
Yeah.
And so it is a different world. And now, but I guess it's almost like what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
Yeah.
Because college athletes, by and large, are on a one-year deal.
Mm-hmm.
And the university or the coach can take that scholarship away at any moment. But now the athletes have the upper hand. It's like, well, you know what? It's been good. I'm done.
I forgot who told this to me, but it's going to eat me up. I can't remember. But they said that your high major teams, your Chapel Hills, your Dukes, your the list goes on. They're recruiting the one and dones out of high school. Mid majors are recruiting the one and dones out of the portal.
Well, but some schools have done a better job of building out of the portal than others. And
well, a lot of people are throwing around the JMUs and all that stuff. I'm like, well, a lot of their players they just got from the portal too. And now that they've lost at Duke in this round of 32, their head coach is taking a job at Vanderbilt, and then a lot of their players are in the portal or the draft. So it's like
they're back at ground zero.
Yeah,
and there is
it's a hot mess.
Yeah, it's a different world, and it's amazing to me that not only are older fans and coaches lamenting what was, you've got younger people who are like, this is not what I grew up on.
Oh, I can't stand it. I'm 24 years old, man. From a media perspective, having to cover this, it's a headache. But just as a fan, watching basketball, like I grew up loving college basketball. In layman's terms, it sucks.
And it's even more confusing than the professional game, because at least in the pros, you sign a contract for X amount of years, and depending what the sport is, well, baseball doesn't really cut anybody. The NBA, everything except for maybe the 10th, 11th, and 12th players, it's all guaranteed. The NFL may be more flexible in terms of, well, after a couple of years, you got to go. But college sports, all bets are off, because the school can take away the scholarship, and now the athletes can just get up and go whenever they want, and that's all you can do.
I had a former SID tell me that if he were a college player in the market today for college basketball, he'd enter the portal every year.
And a lot are doing just that.
He would enter the portal every year, not necessarily to go somewhere else, but to just test the waters.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm in the portal. What you going to offer me? If I don't like that, I can say, all right, I'm out of the portal. I'm staying here.
And then it also puts coaches, not just the coaches that may be trying to get players out of the portal, but it
retains
players. Yeah, you have to re-recruit your roster every year.
It's terrible. There's no commitment. And again, I'm not putting fault on the kids, because I couldn't say I'd do the same thing or wouldn't do the same thing. But it's just a totally different thing than what I grew up watching. I'm sure what you grew up watching, and yeah, it's a hot mess.
Well, but it's the mess we have, so
yeah, we deal with it.
Absolutely, because we have no choice right now.
That's right.
And another major occurrence in Charlotte in the last week was Steve Joyner and Johnson C. Smith deciding to part ways after 37 years, 600 wins, 3 CIAA championships, 1 Elite Eight, and I'm still wrapping my mind around that. That's a lot of history, and I did the math, and it'll be 42 years since a Joyner either played or coached or was an administrator at Johnson C. Smith.
Talk about a legacy.
That's the whole family, because Coach Joyner's son, Steve Jr., played on the 2001 team that got to the Elite Eight. His nephew, Buck Joyner Jr., played for him in the middle part of the 90s. And his brother, Buck Sr., was an assistant coach at one time at Smith. And you're talking about more than 4 decades separating Smith from its Joinerless years. That's a heck of a run. And you know, on the one hand, it's the end of an era, and I hate to see it end because he's been such a great ambassador for the school. There isn't a reporter in Charlotte who could say with any honesty that Steve Joyner wasn't ready to talk to them. He was approachable. He was good for quotes. And when Smith football sucked to high heaven, there was always the basketball team to rally fans and alums. And now that football has started to grow some legs and really take off, now you've got these changes going on in the basketball program. But I think the university is going to miss him, probably in ways that no one knows right now. And, you know, just hate to see it. But I think that, as you talked about with the changes in college athletics, when you're 73 years old and you've seen everything, and now you're asking them to deal with this on a Division II level, which has even less NIL money than a Division I programs, but the portal is still open to everybody. That's headaches too. And coming off COVID in 2021, it took 2 years for him to build that program back into something. But once he got to 600 wins, it's like, well, you know, maybe we need to go in a different direction. And that's where they are now.
I wanted to ask you, though, because, you know, when you and I were at the NCAA tournament last week, we were talking to various people, and just because it just happened, you know, you just announced that, you know, he was stepping away. And so it's kind of like, what's your take on it? Do you think it was appropriate? Do you think it was time, or do you think he still had some years in him to make this team more successful than it has been? I mean, they had a great home record this past year. Well, not so good.
Not so good on the road.
But nonetheless, was him stepping away the right thing in your mind?
Yeah. I think it was. Now, could he still put together winning programs? Sure. Could he put together CIAA title winning programs?
Doubtful.
Not so sure, especially when you look at the more recent years. The last time they won the CIAA was 2009. That's quite a gap.
Third grade.
Hey, and I wasn't. Let's put it like that.
Well, okay, so I guess if you had to...
And that's the only stick that matters in the CIAA, how many tournament titles you amass.
So, I mean, I may be the 49er fishing out. You're the John C. Smith guru.
Only because I've seen it for a while.
Well, I mean, sure, but nonetheless, you talked a little bit about his legacy. If you had to kind of, I guess in summation, say, you know, what he leaves behind, what would that be?
Well, let's put it like this. His reputation is so that they named a court after him. Yeah. You know, and he's still alive. Right. So to me, that tells you, in a nutshell, really all you need to know.
He's up there with the Roy Williams and the Coach K's.
Well, at least at the Division II HBCU level. Yeah. Because only two other coaches in the CIAA have won more games than Steve Joyner. And Big House Gaines is in the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame. Dave Robbins, who won more than 700 games, he should be there. Yeah. Why he isn't is beyond me. And he's a Gastonia native, by the way. And Steve Joyner is the third one in the CIAA to break that 600 win mark. All three of those guys, by the way, did it at one school. Mm-hmm. And so to me, that's amazing stuff.
Yeah.
You know, to get that many wins over those years, one school, you know, it says a lot. Now, Steve wasn't quite as accomplished as Big House and Dave Robbins, because Big House won a national championship in 1967 with Earl Monroe. Robbins, I think, is the only coach in Division II, at least, to win national titles in three different decades. So that speaks to his genius and abilities. Steve didn't get quite to that level, but still, considering the resources that he was provided at Smith, I don't know if miracle would be the right word, but it's close.
Yeah.
So, you know, but it's going to be an interesting process to see who they bring in as his successor. Will it be somebody who has ties to the university? There are plenty of basketball coaches who are out there, including his nephew, Buck Jr., who was recently fired by Hampton. Would he want to return to his alma mater? Coach with Division I experience.
Yeah.
Maybe. Who's to say?
Yeah, Joe Badgett.
Okay.
I mean, what do you think about him maybe taking that role?
Well, the university says it's going to do a national search.
Yeah.
Now, a national search could mean, it's open to anybody and everybody, or...
How many times have companies globally, we're doing a nationwide search, not globally, but nationally.
Yeah.
We're doing a global search and hire someone in the backyard.
Well, yeah, and there are guys who are in the backyard who could be... or will likely be very strong contenders. Mark Sherrill, who is the number one assistant at Smith, has been, former player at Smith, was an assistant coach with Steve for like 28, 30 years, something like that, high 20s or early 30s. Spent 3 years, I think it was, as a head coach down in the SIAC. So he has head coaching experience. He knows the university, played basketball there. I would think that he will be a candidate. Mm-hmm. Trevin Parks, who played for Joyner and transferred from Charlotte and was a CIAA all-conference player at Smith. He's also on that staff. Another really good candidate.
Now, see, I haven't covered Division II ball much, really, at all. So, what is the environment like? If they hired an outsider like a Joe Badger, even Jeff McInnes comes to mind.
I thought about Jeff too. It's like I'm not so sure about that one.
Well, so hear the thought out.
Mm-hmm.
What would the environment look like? And the crowd, how would they take hiring an outsider? Because I know a lot of times you see Division I programs kind of get tied in. I mean, you know, Duke did it with John Shire because he came up through the program.
North Carolina with Hubert Davis.
Yeah, and so you see that, but you also see, like, Villanova. I mean, Jay Wright leaves and they hire someone that didn't have any ties to the university. So it's like, what do you think would be best for the program?
Well, I would imagine that they will try for the best resume in terms of, do you want a celebrity hire? You know, somebody with a big name, McGinnis.
Yeah.
Not so sure, because he hasn't necessarily done college coaching.
Mm-hmm.
And he hasn't done Division II coaching, which is totally different than Division I. Yeah. And he's never coached at an HBCU, which is a totally different level. So,
but he's got...
He's got name recognition.
Not just that, but he's got reputation, experience. He knows how to cultivate relationships with high school kids because that's what he's done.
I wouldn't necessarily put it past him, but if he were interested, he would have to know that this is not like stepping onto a high school campus. Yeah. And having that relationship with high school players is great, but still there is the reality of this is college now, and some of the things that you may have become accustomed to dealing with folks on a high school level or prep school level, it's totally different when you make that switch over to college. And I don't believe that, Division II is nothing but glorified high school. No, that's still college basketball.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So, and another name that I thought of that might be just throwing stuff up against the wall, see if that would stick, Sean May, who did coach at, I believe it was Elizabeth City State, as an assistant, and he spent 1 or 2 years there. Obviously knows Charlotte very well. Mm-hmm. Played with the Bobcats. Sorry, but he
interesting take.
Yeah, and I don't know if he would want to get out of that higher profile program to take on the challenge or something like that.
Chapel Hill. And
probably way more than he would make at Smith, but then again,
that's what I'm saying.
But then again, Smith is in a position now where it's got some growth going in athletics, where they're doing new facilities, they're adding coaches, and paying for stuff.
You could compete, maybe not give him the exact salary, but at least make it competitive and say, well, here's your first head coaching opportunity,
and see where that takes you.
Yeah.
And so it's also not like he is not familiar with the CIAA, mm-hmm. which I think is a real asset for whoever they bring in. They need to have some sort of working knowledge of that league, of course.
Of the game
as
a whole, too. Because, I mean, and one thing about Sean, he's seen the recent college atmosphere. When you talk about Joe Badgett and you talk about McInnes, they hadn't really had their hands in the college mix a lot, so... You talk about a guy like May who has seen the current environment of college basketball and just the world that is the hot mess of the NIL and transfer portal. He knows it. He has that familiarity. So,
yeah,
that's an interesting one. I like that.
Yeah, but I still wouldn't close the door on Buck Joyner Jr. or Mark Sherrill. If you're talking about inside track guys.
Yeah.
I think those two would be it, but since they say it's a national search, and I use air quotes for that, if they're going to bring in somebody, they had better be an accomplished, probably head coach before coming over here.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like it.
So another week has passed. Another week lies ahead, hopefully.
And March not flown by. I mean, this is just sad.
Hey, everything has flown by this year.
I guess when you're working March Madness, it goes a little quicker because, I mean, even though you're there all day, it just seems like it goes by a lot faster.
Yeah, wasn't the Super Bowl just last week or something?
It seems like it. Oh, man.
So what are you looking forward to next week?
Next week? I'm still looking forward to stuff this week.
Okay, well, what is it?
I mean, we got the Sweet 16 and Elite 8 this week. I mean...
Yeah, that is tonight.
Obviously, next week will be the Final Four, but... there's a lot of good teams left. A lot of teams.
And hopefully there'll actually be some good games, too, while we're at it.
Yeah. Right now, man, UConn, They're tough. It was my pick to win the Natty. It was on my brackets. You know, FanDuel became legal and all this stuff. I bet UConn to win it before the tournament started. So I think they're really, really, really good. All their players complement each other very well. But we'll see if someone can knock them off. I think right now you just look at who matches up well with them. A team like Purdue, a team like Carolina would match up well. Got a big guy inside, quick guards.
What about Houston?
I think they eat them up. In the middle, I think Klingon would eat them up. And Houston, I know they're playing much better than they had going into the tournament. Right now, Houston's got to get by a hot-shooting Duke team. It'd be interesting to see if they can bring them back down to earth a little bit. But I've heard a lot of quote-unquote experts of the NCAA, you know, basketball talk about how, well, depending on how that game's officiated, you know, if Houston doesn't get four guys fouled out like they did against A&M, Houston would have a slight edge. But if they're calling those hip checks, those little fouls that they do that sometimes because of their reputation don't get called, Duke don't have a chance. Because that brand of defense is just – it's something that it depends on which kind of group of officials you get.
Yeah.
If you get those defensive-minded officials that's like, oh, no, I mean, that bump wasn't a foul, blah, blah, blah. But when in all reality – I'm a big proponent of basketball is not supposed to be like football. If you foul them, you foul them. So I couldn't be a referee. I'd be hated. Yeah. And I know for a fact I'd be hated because I'd call every foul that I deem as a foul. I mean, if you make any kind of contact that's forcible and gives you an advantage game, throwing up my hand, blowing a whistle.
Well, okay. Well, so who do you think is advancing?
Golly.
Of course, Duke.
No, I in my brackets, I had. Did I have Duke winning this round or not? I can't remember. I'd have to look it up. But Houston's tough, man. I did not want to play Houston. You know, just as a Duke fan growing up, I know Duke doesn't traditionally play well against those defensive-branded teams.
Mm-hmm.
Just because. Some say it's not physical enough. Some, like myself, say they don't call the fouls that are there. But that's all up to interpretation. I've got UConn advancing tonight. I think they'll wallop San Diego State. I could be wrong, but I think that game's 15 points or more. I've got UNC advancing on a bit of a close game, high-scoring game. I think they play very similar. Both them and Alabama play similar styles of basketball. I've got Illinois with a upset sort of kind of. I mean, Iowa State's like 2-point favorite, so I mean, it's darn near neck and neck game. But I just think Illinois, I mean, they got a future pro on that team, and they're tough. And then tomorrow night, Purdue and Gonzaga, that's one of those games where it's like if Gonzaga gets hot, I don't know how well Purdue's guards will adapt and be able to guard Gonzaga, but when you got Zach Edey,
that's pretty good.
Who gets every call.
Yeah.
And that man just touches the paint. It's like, oh, foul. No, but I mean, Purdue's a good team. I'm not taking anything away from them. I think Tennessee's defense will be too much for Creighton. That's going to be a game. It's like first one to 65 wins.
If you get there.
And it might be the same thing for the Duke-Houston game. If it turned into that defensive style of basketball, I mean, 65-62 might be your final. Either way, you know, Duke or Houston. So, what am I missing? NC State. If Marquette plays their best basketball, they'll run away. But NC State's shown that their defense can hold teams. And how are you going to contain Burns?
DJ Burns.
I mean, that man, he goes in there like a bull at a stampede, you know, just hurling into the paint. But he has grace around the rim.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird to say that a big old 300-pound guy is like 6'7", 6'8", however tall he is, has grace. But he finishes with touch.
Yeah.
And that's one thing that it's impressive to watch. Everybody wants State and Duke, obviously, you know, ACC foes for the right to go to the Final Four. But, okay, who do I have advancing? UConn, Illinois, Arizona over Clemson by probably a healthy margin. UNC, close. I don't know if, that's going to be a high-scoring game. I just don't know. We'll see. Give me Duke in a close one. I think if they can get to 65, I don't know if Houston can score with them. Because, I mean, Duke's not a bad defensive team themselves. Give me Marquette. Very close game. Give me Purdue. If their guards play well enough. And give me Tennessee.
Okay. I'm just impressed that four teams from the Carolinas are still in it.
Right.
I'm like, okay, Clemson and NC State. Who had those two programs on Sweet 16
card? A lot of people had Duke on the upset watch against JMU because they were playing like crap.
Well, but sometimes it just works out. Yeah. So, you know, but the thing that I'm looking forward to in the next week is the return of Major League Soccer's regular referees. Yeah. They finally got a collective bargaining agreement done. I think it was Tuesday. So they are returning to work starting with Saturday's games. And hopefully we can put into the past incidents like the first half of last week's Charlotte Columbus Crew game that took 62 minutes to play. Keep in mind, soccer is played in 45 minute halves. They went to 60, it took them an hour and 2 minutes to finish one half of soccer because the officials were so discombobulated and it was just a mess. You know, something is wrong when you have to redo the opening kickoff a couple of times. So
it's soccer. Like, just do kick the ball.
You would think, but no, apparently not. It has to be done a certain way when you're talking to replacement officials. Mm-hmm. And it just goes to show you, no matter what the sport is, you need to have your best people on the job. So that's what I'm looking forward to. Shout out to soccer. And
shout out to baseball. It's opening day, Herb. It's exciting. Baseball, yay.
Okay.
get on your DraftKings app. Get ready. Follow me on Action Sports Network to track my bets. I'll help you make some money.
Well, but opening day in Major League Baseball, it has its place.
It's the American pastime.
Is it? But it's not America's game.
Well, no.
Well, that's all I'm saying.
That's football.
Well, by every metric out there.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's something quaint about Major League Baseball and its opening day. And once the weather gets better and, you know, perhaps some interest will turn that way, we'll see.
Now, you see, I love the spring baseball games and the fall baseball games. As someone that's worked at baseball facilities and stuff through college and even still now from time to time, July baseball sucks.
Well, it's hot. It's hot. Well, but that's why games are played at night, mostly.
Some of those, yeah.
Yeah.
It ain't nighttime till 9 o'clock, and when you got a 7:30 first pitch, it's hot.
Well, that goes without saying, but you know, for the most part, baseball is played outdoors, so you know what you're signing up for.
I don't mean I'm signing up to go out there in the dirt heat.
Well, you don't have to worry about that today.
Going up in the press box in the air conditioning with the food back behind me, you know, got a nice little spread.
And it's free.
It is free.
Yes, it is. So we'll see how that all works out.
Free for me.
And we appreciate you listening to this prolonged edition of Sports Charlotte. And we obviously have fun with it. And we appreciate you out there. And, yeah, great to have you along with us. But I have to throw this in. The podcast is free to download. The journalism is available on our website at thecharlottepost.com. But creating content ain't free.
We got to eat.
Yes. Support us by becoming a subscriber or a donor. Either way, We appreciate it. Just go to our website, thecharlottepost.com, and there are buttons on the website. Click on subscribe or donate. And we appreciate it tremendously. God bless you all. And for everybody else at the Charlotte Post,
have a happy Easter.
And thanks for listening.
QueenCityPodcastNetwork.com.